This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Like with a lot of water tests around fracking, it's ambiguous because companies don't have to say what they put downhole.
During the 2016 presidential race, many environmentalists found it disheartening that Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump actually seemed to agree on the expansion of fracking in the U.S. Some of us were wondering if the fight had been lost. That's why it's so encouraging to see good journalism persisting in the face of general indifference. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak to Neela Banerjee of Inside Climate News, who recently wrote an article chronicling the travails of one small, vulnerable Western Pennsylvania family. Her piece also brought to light why one government contractor was reluctant to attach its name to an EPA report that downplayed the risks of fracking. We discuss how irresponsible policy can lead to devastating consequences for real people. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by senior reporter from Inside Climate News, Neela Banerjee. Neela, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex.
So you just recently authored a really great piece on your site, Inside Climate News, entitled Industrial Strength, How the U.S. Government Hid Fracking's Risks to Drinking Water. We'll link to that on the website. Why don't you first tell us how you came to this story?
Well, so we actually came to the story not through people, which is what normally happens. There's a lot of times you go out into communities where fracking occurs and you hear about their fears and possible changes to their water and the environment. This was sort of something different, right? Inside Climate is working on a project right now called Chokehold, which looks at the different ways that the fossil fuel industry exercises its influence across American society, whether it's in litigation, whether it's in subverting clean energy proposals and projects on the state level. And what I was looking at was the fact that the oil and gas industry in particular enjoys all sorts of exemptions to major federal laws, right? So one of the exemptions that's best known is called the Halliburton loophole. This was part of the Energy Policy Act of 2005 that excluded federal oversight, EPA oversight, of fracking. Specifically, there's the Safe Drinking Water Act that protects water underground that you would use in wells from wells and so on, and reservoir and aquifers rather. And so the EPA cannot demand to know from oil and gas companies what they're putting underground, and they can't put in place protections for groundwater for fracking. So that's what we were looking at, right, was this loophole, and how did this loophole come about? The loophole, which was in 2005, was based on an EPA study that came out in 2004 that said that fracking does not pose a risk to drinking water. So in the course of looking at the study, which was controversial even then, and, there was a whistleblower on it who said the science isn't sound and so on and so forth, we found that the study was done not by EPA staff, but by contractors. And so what ended up happening was I basically stumbled across a story. I called the contractors, and they're scientists who work for a Massachusetts government contractor called Cadmus Group. And I was talking to them about the study and how it was controversial. And finally I said, why isn't your name on the study? Why isn't Cadmus Group's name on the study? Now, somewhere on federal studies, you'll see the name of the contractor tucked away, right? In this 2004 study, like 463 pages, you don't find Cadmus's name anywhere. And it was just an offhand question. And one of the scientists said, well, because we didn't want our name on the study. And that stopped me in my tracks. And I said, well, why? And he said, because we didn't agree with the findings. And I said, well, what findings are those? And he said, we didn't agree with the fact that EPA said that fracking did not pose a risk to drinking water. We thought that there was some threat and that we should, study it further to understand the magnitude of it. Is it small? Is it great? And so that was the story. All of a sudden, you know, we just stumbled across it with this throwaway question.
But that's big, because the Cadmus group is critical in a lot of these EPA studies, aren't they?
They are. So, you know, so the EPA, just like a lot of other federal agencies, uses government contractors, you know, on a bid system for projects to, because they have particular expertise. So the Cadmus group has done all sorts of work on EPA water standards going back years. And, you know, that study came out in 2004, and it supported this rule in 2005. More recently, under the Obama administration, you know, after fracking took off, there were a lot of complaints about water. So the Obama administration went back and looked at fracking again. And this time they said, you know, fracking does pose a threat to drinking water. And they could not say what the magnitude of that risk was, but this was a big change. And the people who did that study were also the Cadmus group. But if you look at that 2016 study that the Obama administration did, Cadmus's names and the names of the individual scientists at Cadmus are all over the, you know, the acknowledgments in the study.
Let's read the quote that you have from Chi Ho Sham. He's the group manager of a team of scientists at the Cadmus group. He says, at EPA, quote, there was a preconceived conclusion that there's no risk associated with hydraulic fracturing into coal bed methane. What we would have said in the conclusion is that there's some form of risk from hydraulic fracturing to groundwater. How you quantify it would require further analyses, but in general, there is some risk. Now, can you differentiate between coal bed methane fracturing and other kind of fracturing, or is coal bed methane fracturing fracking? Are there other types?
Right. So what we have right now is slightly different than coal bed methane fracturing, right?
When you say what we have, what do you mean?
Okay, what we have meaning like what, so there's, you know, there's this domestic oil and gas boom in the United States, and that's driven by high volume hydraulic fracturing. And that is in reservoirs and deposits far deeper than coal bed methane. You know, coal seams are closer to the surface, right? And when the study was done, when it was commissioned in 2000, it was because coal bed methane at that time was seen as the big, you know, as the next big thing in oil and gas development, or in gas development rather, and that you would, you know, get this gas that naturally exists in coal seams. So the kind of fracking that we have now around the country into shale deposits wasn't really happening yet, or at least the public didn't know about it yet. So what happened was that this study was done into coal bed methane and water, or, you know, fracking into coal bed methane and whether that affects drinking water. Cadmus thought it did. EPA said no. And then it ended up being the basis for this 2005 Halliburton loophole. But here's the thing, right? The Halliburton loophole exempts federal oversight of fracking, not just into coal bed methane, but into all of hydraulic fracturing. What's interesting about this is that when the study was being conducted by the EPA, you know, so this is the early 2000s, that's when the Bush administration took office. In 2001, Vice President Cheney, if you recall, he'd been the chairman of Halliburton, he pulled together an energy policy task force that looked at different priorities that the United States should set in energy development. One of the things it talked about was fracking and the potential it had, and that it should be exempt from the Safe Drinking Water Act, from this federal law. There's a memo that we cite in the story, and you know, you can look at it. I think it's digitized as part of the story, that the EPA administrator at the time, Christy Todd Whitman, sent to Cheney and said, "We agree with you on exempting coal bed methane fracking from the Safe Drinking Water Act, but not fracking more broadly." She said, you know, this is just too broad. We don't know where this is going or what the implications could be. And she was ignored. So, you know, there's this foresight, it seemed, that industry had about fracking spreading and the latitude that they wanted from federal law going forward. Now, you know, did the White House affect what happened at the EPA? We don't know. You know, we haven't been able to draw any kind of line. But certainly there was an awareness at the top levels of the White House and their allies in Congress that fracking would benefit from as wide an exclusion from federal water law as possible.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Neela Banerjee. She's a senior reporter for Inside Climate News. So, Neela, tell us about the Latkanich family that you reported on in Western Pennsylvania.
It's a heartbreaking story, but it's really the tip of the iceberg, it sounds like, in that region where there's just thousands and thousands of these kind of contracts. Why don't you explain what the Latkaniches have been through?
Right. So the Latkanich family is a father and son. The man's name is Brian Latkanich. He's 46 years old, and he lives with his youngest son, Ryan, who is 7. And, you know, Brian bought this land over time. It was like 33 acres, and it's on this hill, and there's this pond, and, it's beautiful. I mean, it's just this little town called Deemston, Pennsylvania. And there's been oil and gas, not oil, but gas development in that part of Pennsylvania for a while. But fracking started to come into that area around 2007-2008. In 2010, Brian's marriage to his wife had ended. His wife and his two older sons moved to a different place. He had a girlfriend, and he was diagnosed with a brain tumor. It was benign, but it was quite large, and it had to be removed. So when it was removed, it blinded him in one eye. It limited his ability to do most kinds of jobs, and so he's on disability. In the meantime, so he's recovering from this. He is racking up bills through his divorce. He's not working. And his girlfriend at the time gives birth to Ryan, and she is addicted to opioids, and Ryan is taken away and placed in foster care. So besides paying for lawyers, Brian also is starting to pay for lawyers to help with getting Ryan out of the foster care system and, back into his home.
So he was really in financial straits. He was a very vulnerable member of the population, to say the least.
He was. And, he figured between, lawyer bills for the divorce and lawyer bills for the custody battle for Ryan, he probably owed $150,000. And he spent this whole year in a hospital bed in his dining room. So a subsidiary of Chevron called Chevron Appalachia sent representatives to his home and said, we believe that you're sitting on top of a great deal of natural gas, and we'd like to drill here, and, here are the terms, right? And so they, according to Brian Latkanich, they offered him, they said he would make, tens of thousands of dollars a month in royalties and, millions in the first year. And he admits that he was totally wooed by this money, given the fact that not only did he have these huge bills, but that he's not going to really be able to work the rest of his life. And he's only, in his mid-40s, right? So so he signed. And that was in 2011. And in 2012, they fracked two wells on this hillside overlooking his property. And, and since then, his water quality has deteriorated. Now, he had the presence of mind to get a baseline test done of his water. He's got a well that he gets water from on his property. He got a baseline test done of that water.
Is that unusual?
Not in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is one of these states that I think it's like got the second greatest percentage of its population that relies on private water wells as opposed to municipal wells or municipal drinking systems. So yeah, so he, you know, he gets his water from this well, and what ended up happening was that about a year after the fracking, his little boy Ryan, he got Ryan back from foster care. Ryan's mom is bathing him upstairs and starts screaming because when she takes Ryan out of the tub, he's three at the time. He's covered in open sores, right? They're not using anything, any new products or anything like that. And I've seen the pictures. I mean, there's sores all over this little boy's body, right? So they think it's the water. The state tests the water. They don't find any change to it. And then more recently, Ryan has developed incontinence issues. And, you know, he's seven and he never had problems with potty training or anything like that. The doctors ran routine tests, found nothing, but the state is testing their water. They also got a researcher from Duquesne University in nearby Pittsburgh to test the water. And he didn't find anything, you know, any kind of carcinogens or anything like that, like benzene or whatever. But he did find a deterioration of the water quality, you know, very high levels of sodium and higher levels of things like iron and calcium and strontium. And so, like with a lot of water tests around fracking, it's ambiguous because companies don't have to say what they put down hole. I mean, in Pennsylvania, they're supposed to use a site like Frack Focus, where they do report some of the substances that they use in their fracking fluids. But there are things that they can keep secret and just say that it's a trade secret. And as such, labs don't really know what to test for. Doctors don't really know what to test for. You know, there's a lot of mystery around what's in people's water, what goes down the hole, what healthcare professionals should be testing for. So, you know, they're stuck there, right? They do get bottled water. It's not something that they can afford to bathe in or brush their teeth with.
So they cook with it.
Yeah, they cook with it and they drink it. You know, this is like a lot of people in Pennsylvania and elsewhere who've had concerns about their water have gone to the gas company and complained. And what happens is that they enter into settlements. The gas company, you know, maybe buys out their property or pays to hook them up to a municipal system or something. But the rub here is that to get that money, you as the homeowner have to agree to a non-disclosure agreement. What that means is that those of us, journalists, healthcare professionals, even state regulators, might not really know what's happened to people's water because of these non-disclosure agreements. And so it took us a long time to find Brian because there are a lot of people whose water's been affected or who are concerned about their water in Pennsylvania, but most of them have signed NDAs. And he isn't able to get a lawyer yet to help him, you know, negotiate with Chevron. And he's also waiting for the state results to come back to him.
I'm fixing a hole where the rain gets in and stops my mind from wondering where it will go. I'm filling the cracks that ran through the door and kept my mind from wondering where it will go. And it really doesn't matter if I'm wrong, I'm right. Where I belong, I'm right. Where I belong. Well, silly people, they're standing there, they disagree, they never.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Neela Banerjee. She's a senior reporter at Inside Climate News. So, Neela, last year you did a piece entitled "The EPA Once Said Fracking Did Not Cause Widespread Water Contamination, Not Anymore." Basically, the agency had kind of backtracked from its previous conclusion in the Halliburton-Cheney era, if you will.
Right.
Now this angered the oil and gas industry, obviously, and now they have, since that article came out, they have a much stronger ally in Scott Pruitt running the EPA and Donald Trump.
Right.
We've covered fracking on an annual basis here at Sea Change Radio, starting with Josh Fox's. We had him on after Gasland came out, and the fracking issue has kind of been put to bed by a lot of people. Obama and Clinton were pretty pro-fracking, but Bernie Sanders was not for it. The mainstream, both liberals and conservatives, have, for better or for worse, seemingly accepted the ills that come along with fracking. So maybe you can kind of catch us up on how we got here. When the EPA has backtracked and we see these issues of contamination continually spring up, how has it become okay?
How it became okay is that, you know, you can't just make up a regulation or an exemption out of whole cloth. You have to have evidence to back it up, right? And the evidence was this 2004 study. And so, you know, the folks at Cadmus said that that fracking posed some risk to drinking water. They didn't know how much, but that this question needed to be studied further before anything could be said categorically. EPA decided to short-circuit that, announced that fracking posed no risk to drinking water, and that loophole, you know, that conclusion supported the loophole being passed in 2005. So after that, you know, you had this big boom open up. Now, would the fracking boom have occurred even if the EPA regulated fracking? Probably, but you might have had fewer incidents. And let me be clear, like, I'm not saying fracking in every case or most cases, you know, contaminates drinking water, right? We don't know that. And I think that is the issue, is that nobody really knows. Now, what's happened since then is that in 2015 and 2016, EPA put out, in 2015, they put out a draft of a more comprehensive study. But even that study was lacking in many ways. You know, what you need to do to see if fracking poses a risk to drinking water is, in multiple places, go in as the regulator or contractor and monitor the water quality before, during, and after fracking and oil and gas production. And just, you know, keep an eye on what happens to the water quality in all sorts of different geological formations. And you need the oil and gas companies to agree to that. And they didn't. You know, EPA wanted to get, these are called prospective studies, they wanted to get that for that 2015 study. They couldn't. They just didn't have the leverage or the political will to push the companies to do that. So we don't know how water quality changes over time or the best practices used by companies to protect water quality, right? And that's where we are today, is that, you know, when the 2016 study was finalized by EPA, they finally admitted that fracking has affected water quality, but they still can't say they still can't give homeowners and other Americans a sense of the risk, right? Is it, you know, when fracking occurs within 1,000 feet of your home, is it a 1% risk to your drinking water? Is it a 10% risk? Is it an 80% risk? You know, nobody knows that. And when do problems appear? Is it, you know, right after fracking? Is it a year after fracking? You know, again, we just don't know. And we're not going to know for a while because it's not just Scott Pruitt. I mean, really, like, what you would need is Congress to repeal a law they passed, this exemption to the Safe Drinking Water Act that was part of the 2005 Energy Policy Act. And this Congress is not going to do it. And even if it were led by Democrats, I don't know if they would do it either. So that's where we are. You know, the evidence mounts, but the politicians and the regulators are not reviewing this material with the seriousness that their constituents deserve.
When we look at the Cadmus quotes that you uncovered in your reporting, it's significant in terms of a glimpse underneath the hood of what goes into some of these reports. What kind of takeaways do you think you would like to see? Do you think that a Cadmus can continue to make an impact, or will EPA just go and find another third party that will say what they want?
Right. So I think that how the process works is that even before Cadmus, the first exemption that industry got to federal pollution law was the Resource Conservation Recovery Act, RCRA, which is for solid waste, right? And oil field waste isn't considered hazardous, even though it can be radioactive and have carcinogens and all of this stuff in it. And that was also because industry, the oil industry, successfully lobbied the administration at the time, it was the Reagan administration, Congress, and EPA to carve out this exemption. The exemption was done by a Democrat. It was Lloyd Benson of Texas who made sure that exemption was given. So this is a thing that has been going on for a while, right? For 40 years, where industry pushes and you don't have politicians who are willing to stand up for them. And I think, contractors such as Cadmus or any of the others, they do their work. They do their work as best they can, and then it's up to EPA to and administrations in Congress to take the science seriously. I mean, it's a constant battle, and I think for us the reason this was important for us to do is for Americans to understand the pressures that scientists are under, the subversion of science that occurs to give industry what it wants. It happens under Democrats. It happens under Republicans. Industry has enormous influence. And what we have to think about how we as a society respond to that in a meaningful way, not in just a knee-jerk way like, industry is evil or something like that, because that's just not, that's not useful, right? So the question is, how do things get done based on facts? And that's, and that is going to be, you got to keep your eye on the ball no matter who's in office, right? If you're a progressive and, Bernie Sanders is in office, you still have to keep your eye on the ball. So that's a situation that plays out in government.
Well, it's terrific work as always. Senior reporter from Inside Climate News, Neela Banerjee. Neela, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Oh, thanks for having me, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Tony Rice and the Wood Brothers.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.